The most useful Christians that I know are vulnerable Christians. Vulnerable Christians. What is it to be vulnerable? Well, here's a good definition. Vulnerability is a state of emotional exposure that comes with a certain degree of uncertainty. It involves a person's willingness to accept the emotional risk that comes from being open and willing to be loved and to love. It really involves admitting weakness and imperfection and need. I'm sure you know them. I certainly know them. Christians who would never admit to any imperfection, any weakness, or any need. I'm thinking of one in particular. And she would never, not in a million years, admit any kind of difficulty, any imperfection, any flaw, any fault. There's just no chink in her armor. In fact, she views that perfection very much as a strength, and anyone else who is weak or talks of weakness, they are very much despised and demeaned and looked down upon. And the result of this, well, this Christian, not in this congregation, I hasten to add, this Christian has completely disconnected herself from everyone else. No one can get through. No one can connect with her. She's the most critical person I think I know, and the most lacking in compassion, and therefore the most useless Christian. She has no friends, and she has no ministry. And that's what is the opposite of vulnerability. The most vulnerable Christians are the most useful Christians. The most impregnable, perfect Christians are the most useless Christians. You may have heard of a book written by Brené Brown. The title of it's rather long, so let me just read it out. The Gifts of Imperfection. Let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are. Your guide to a wholehearted life. Interesting connection there, isn't it? Her book's all about vulnerability. She's a social scientist. She's done a ton of research on it. Very famous TED Talk on the subject. And here she's saying the gifts of imperfection, or the gift of vulnerability, letting go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are, your guide to a wholehearted life. She's really saying, here's the way to a useful life, to make significant contributions to the world. Now, it's not a Christian book. I think she does go to church, but it's not a Christian book, and there are some themes in it that we would definitely want to correct. So if you want to read it, speak to me, and I'll guide you a little bit. But there is truth in it, a helpful truth, that I think can enable us to learn what vulnerability is, the kind of vulnerability that the Apostle Paul demonstrates here in 2 Corinthians 6, verses 3 through 13. So I want to ask this question. How important is vulnerability in the Christian life and in ministry? How important is vulnerability? Is it something that we can just, well, that's for them, it's not for me? Is it something you can be without and still be useful? That's the kind of thing that is brought out through these verses. So, where does vulnerability begin? Well, as Paul shows us here, vulnerability champions open hearts. Vulnerability champions having an open heart. And we want to see this in two ways. We want to look at Paul's words here, and he shows us vulnerability in theory and then vulnerability in practice. So the theory, the idea of it, and then the practice of it, what it actually looks like in everyday life. So let's look at his words about vulnerability in theory, and we see them in two verses. The first one is verse 3. He says, "We put no obstacle in anyone's way so that no fault may be found with our ministry." What's he saying here? He's saying, I'm not going to put an obstacle between me and you. And that's what we often do. We put on a mask or a defense or a filter because we think that that will make us more useful. And what Paul is saying is, I'm taking off the filter. I'm removing any obstacle. I'm removing anything that would distort who I really am, presenting me maybe better than who I really am. He says all that is, any obstacle like that is an obstacle to ministry. So he says, we put no obstacle in anyone's way so that no fault may be found in our ministry. And then if you fast forward to verse 11, he says, we have spoken freely to you, O Corinthians. And we'll look at what he said because it's vulnerability in practice. But here he's recapping and he says, we've spoken freely to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. Our heart is wide open. So every obstacle removed and opened up as wide as he possibly can. He's saying, I've tried to be as open, as honest, as transparent, as authentic as I possibly can. Indeed, this epistle, the 2 Corinthians, is known as Paul's most personal, his most biographical, his most revealing personally of all the epistles he wrote. His heart truly was wide open. If you remember last week, he poured himself out in the previous verses, pleading with the Corinthians to be reconciled to God and to one another. Very affectionate, very emotional, very vulnerable. Because that kind of thing gets rejection, even laughter and mockery in return sometimes. So he's saying, I'm not protecting my own heart, my own feelings. Corinthians, I know that you're turning against me and some of you have left me, and it would be very easy for me to protect myself and just disown you and dismiss you and denounce you, but I'm going to risk going after you, and I'm going to risk exposing myself even more. And so he says, I'm going to remove every filter and every obstacle so that we can connect. So that's vulnerability in theory. What does it look like in practice? Well, that's what we see here in verses 4 to 10. And when he goes through this list that we're about to look at, you have to understand that the people who had come in and invaded the Corinthian church and taken away the people that Paul had led to faith, they were critiquing and condemning the Apostle Paul for certain of his faults, his manner, his method, his sufferings. And they were saying, there's no one can be sent of God. No one can be a godly man who says this, does that, doesn't do this, who endures such sufferings, who disavows every kind of rhetorical technique. And instead of Paul defending himself on these charges, he actually owns them. He says, see what these guys are saying? I own it. I take it. That I admit it. That's me. And that's what vulnerability is. As Brené Brown said, it's the ability to let oneself be seen as we really are. It's the ability to let oneself be seen as we really are. And that's what Paul does in verses 3 through 10. He lets himself be seen. He doesn't minimize what his accusers were saying. He doesn't deny them. He doesn't try and spin it. He says, you've got me. All that that you say, exactly. Look at five ways he lists the way he's been vulnerable. We start with his humble commendation of himself in verse 4. Remember, his enemies had come with credentials and commendations and references from high religious figures in Jerusalem, saying that these men who have come to Corinth to take over this church, these are the high and the mighty and the respected and to be admired. These are leaders. These are powerful. These are influential men. What does Paul say? Probably. That's not me. I'm not a ruler. I'm not powerful. How does he describe himself? Look at verse 4. As a servant of God. He says, I'm a servant. That's who I am. I'm not a top-down guy. I'm a bottom-up guy. I own it. I exist to serve, not rule. So he has a very humble commendation of himself. Their critique, definitely true. And then there are his multiple sufferings. You can read of these in verses 4 and 5. By great endurance, in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labor, sleepless nights, hunger. His enemies had said, this guy can't be an apostle. This guy can't be a man of God. Look at everything he's going through. And the apostle says, everything they say, worse. All that they listed, I can add to it. Yeah, multiple sufferings. That's me. I'm your man if you're looking for that. And then thirdly, he speaks of his unusual manner. Again, the enemies would come in with their very impressive aura and presentation, sweeping people away with their charisma and their gifts. How did Paul conduct himself? What was his manner? It was very unusual for the day. You can read about it in verse 6. Purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, the Holy Spirit, genuine love. Very different to his enemies. And then fourthly, we see here his simple methods. Again, this was why Paul was critiqued. You remember in the first letter to the Corinthians, Paul spoke about the Jews look for powerful signs. The Greeks look for great philosophical wisdom. What do? We preach Christ crucified, and that's it. It's very simple. We don't have very complicated methods. We don't have very tricky techniques. And he explains that further in verse 7. Truthful speech and the power of God. With the weapons of righteousness, that's the weapon of a holy life, on the right hand and on the left. And then we have his mixed results. People critique Paul and they said, how many followers does he have? Count all the people we've got, our followers, our friends. You might say how many likes and retweets and shares in our own day. Paul says, yeah, results, I'm not your man for that. It's been very mixed. There's certainly some, I can't deny, the Lord has done some good through me, but there's been a lot of cost along the way. Look at how he puts it in verse 8, honor and dishonor, slander and praise were treated as imposters, and yet, as true, to some people were true. As unknown, people disown us, and yet to others we're well known. Dying, that's what everyone says, and yet behold, we live. We're punished time and again, yet not killed. We're sorrowful, yet we're still rejoicing. We're poor, we've got nothing, yet we're making many rich. We've got nothing, and yet we're possessing everything. So You see what Paul's doing here? He's practicing vulnerability. He is being who he is. He is just being honest and open. All filters removed, all obstacles removed, and said, okay, let's just be honest about who I am. Here's my humble commendation. Here's my multiple sufferings. Here's my, unusual manner, my simple methods, and my very mixed results. I can't add more, and I don't want to take away anything from it. How many of us would have the courage to write and speak like that, for our life to be known in this way? It's a model of vulnerability. And so Paul, here in championing open hearts, as he says here, our heart is wide open. He's calling us to value vulnerability, to value vulnerability. The most useful Christians I know are the most vulnerable Christians. Try and think through in your own mind the kind of people who God uses or God's used in your own life. Is it the people who stand way up here and look down on you and say, jump higher? Or is it the ones that come alongside and say, look, I know you're struggling. Let me tell you about my struggles too. You think of people in our own congregation. Many people in our congregation of practice. I think of Macy. Think of Laurie Rodema. Others who have made films with Tina, telling their stories. Chad and Stacy, Callie. It's hard to do. To open your heart, put yourself out there, be exposed. But how valuable is it? How it multiplies in so many ways. In Brené Brown's book, she talks about vulnerability being made up of three elements: courage, compassion, and connection. Courage, compassion, and connection. And when all these things come together, we have a wholehearted life. We have a wholehearted life. It's valuable. It's useful. Think of the Conqueror series in our congregation, the men who gather and encourage one another. It involves open hearts. It involves being truthful. It involves opening up. It involves admitting imperfection, weakness, need. Not easy. Certainly not for men. And yet, how much good, how much connection there is, how much courage is in that, how much compassion it produces, and a wholehearted life is the result. I remember speaking at Harvest OPC's men's retreat, and I spoke there maybe a couple of years after they started their own similar group. It was called the James Fellowship there. And I've spoken at many events in my life, but that one really stuck in my mind because I'd never, ever encountered a men's discipleship group that was so bonded, that was such a brotherhood. The frankness, the openness, the connection, the courage, it was just staggering to me. So let's value this. Let's see this as a gospel value. Paul's a great model of it. But you know who is the best model of vulnerability? Jesus, isn't he? Now, he had no sinful weaknesses, no sinful imperfections, no sinful needs. But he had weakness. He had hunger. He had thirst. He needed human company. He exposed himself to people. He was compassionate. He was courageous. He was trying to connect. He could write something far longer than Paul did here, and went so far as the vulnerability of the cross, stretched out naked. What vulnerability? All of heaven, earth, and hell ranged against him, attacking him in various ways, expressing anger against him. And there he hung. He could have stepped down from there at any moment, but allowed himself to be spat on, to be mocked, to be laughed at, in order to show us true connection, true courage, true compassion, a truly wholehearted life. We can value this. We can worship the invulnerable God who became vulnerable in order to connect with us. And then let's practice it. Let's not just value it as a, well, that's a nice ideal for them, for him, for her, but not me. No, let's practice it. It's actually liberating. I know it's scary, but it's liberating, as most people will tell you. And I think men, maybe especially West Michigan men, need to hear this especially, because we have a caricature of what it means to be a man. And it means you're strong, you're independent, you don't need any brother or friend, you are self-sufficient. And yet it means you're disconnected. You can't help others, and you can't get help when you need it either. We need to practice vulnerability. It opens the way to ministry. I've seen families transformed when the husband, the father, eventually, after much struggle, lets the defenses down and becomes vulnerable. I've seen it in my own life. Admitting to my family at times, some years ago, my own needs. After many times of my wife saying to me, "You need help. You need to go get help." I finally had to admit I had depression and anxiety. And I went and I got help. I needed it. And it's opened up a whole world of usefulness and connection, and much greater compassion to others and from others. So let's practice it. Let's take the step. Let's embrace it. Let go of the need to please, the need to perform, the need to pretend, the need to be perfect. It's liberating. It's freeing. It's Christ-like. Mark Twain wrote this about vulnerability. Dance like no one is watching. Sing like no one is listening. Love like you've never been hurt. And live like it's heaven on earth. What freedom is in that? Vulnerability is valuable. So what makes us resist it? If it's so valuable, so useful, so helpful, so beneficial, why aren't we all like this? What makes us hesitate? Well, Paul explains that here. Vulnerability challenges closed hearts. It challenges closed hearts. Look at verse 12. He says to the Corinthians, "After having said, 'My heart's wide open,' you are not restricted by us, but you are restricted in your own affections. In return, widen your hearts also." He's saying, okay, I've opened my heart. Now I'm coming to challenge you to open yours. And to remove the restrictions, the limitations. What are the limitations to us opening the doors of our hearts? Why are we like this? So many people knocking in our hearts, maybe even God knocking in our hearts, and we won't let them in. These hinges are rusted shut. Well, there's the limitation of self-image, how we like to think about ourselves. That's a huge limitation a huge challenge to vulnerability. That's not who I am. That's not my character. That's not who I want to be. Reputation is another limitation. What will people think? What will people say? What will my boss think? What about my peers, my friends, my parents? Position. Somebody in my position shouldn't be like that. We have to conduct ourselves with, you know, dignity and respect. And then there's tradition. We've never done that before. That's not the way I was raised. Family. My family doesn't do that and never will. Culture. I'm Scottish. You're Dutch. This isn't easy, right? But I think unless we recognize what's obstructing and becoming a barrier, we'll never actually deal with them. And we don't want to be Dutch or Scottish. We want to be Christian and Christ-like. And really, all of these limitations come down to this one word: shame. That's the opposite of vulnerability is shame. Shame is what stops us being vulnerable. If vulnerability is the way to connecting, shame is the disconnector. It's the disconnector. And that's what Paul's saying. You know, Corinthians, we're disconnected. What's the problem? You're not restricted by us, but you're restricted in your own affections. Especially, I believe he's getting at this affection or emotion of shame. Shame is like a padlock. It's like chains. They keep us secure, but they also restrict and tighten, shut us off from others, from helping others and others helping us. They limit us in our personality, our development, our usefulness. They limit us in terms of getting help from others. They narrow our hearts. They narrow our characters. They disconnect us from ourselves, from others, and above all, from God. Look at what Paul says here. He reminds him, I speak as to children. He's saying, look, I'm your dad, your spiritual dad. You can trust me. Let's be family together. I won't take advantage of you. I won't abuse your vulnerability. Brené Brown in her book reminds us that the actual original definition of the word courage is from the Latin word cor, C-O-R, meaning heart. And she says the original definition was to tell the story of who you are with your whole heart. It's not a modern-day version of courage, as we think Navy SEALs, Marines. But the original definition is a brave heart. It's not somebody riding a horse with a blue and white flag in their face. It's being open-hearted, which is to be wholehearted. The vulnerable, very simply, she says, have the courage to be imperfect. It's being willing to let go of who you think you should be in order to be who you are. It's speaking openly and honestly about who we are, what we're feeling, and our experiences. So let's break the chains of shame. Let's break them. Take a step. Try to understand what's holding you back. Name it, own it, and take a step. I'm not saying go and spill your guts on Facebook. I mean, you'll just be, it's like savage dogs will turn on you. But is there someone you could trust? Someone you could take a risk with? Someone who's been vulnerable with you that you could begin to exercise that tiny little pea muscle of vulnerability? Begin to grow it? It might transform your marriage, your parenting, your friendships, the way you manage people. Think of Joe DeBlois and Mary Beth Skierbeck, who often speak in our Daily Story Changer podcast. It's just vulnerability in practice, isn't it? It's so lovely and warming and connecting just to hear people being honest about the challenges and the difficulties, how God's helped, other people have helped. And it's so connecting. We don't realize what we're missing out on. But it's risky. Man, it's so risky. It's scary. I could lose a lot. You already are losing a lot. There is a risk. We've got to admit that. Some people will abuse it, take advantage of it, laugh at us even. So there is a risk. But there's a certainty of losing out if we don't. Let's break the chains of shame and enjoy deep connection. We can begin with small steps like this. I'm scared. Another little step. I need help. Another little step, I don't know what to do. Even ask a question. Tiny little baby steps towards vulnerability. Vulnerability is victory. Every time someone is vulnerable, there's more courage in the world, there's more compassion in the world, and there's more connection in the world. Vulnerability is victory, not defeat. It's strength, not weakness. It's Christ-like. And let's start with God, eh? One thing to be open and honest with one another, but we have to start really with God. We can pretend to others, but we can't pretend to God, so we might as well get used to that. No obstacles, no filters. Open heart, totally honest. Be who you are, really are before God. What courage that takes, but what connection and what compassion you'll receive as you begin to deal with God in a completely different way, and you receive from Him more courage, more connection, more compassion, a bigger heart, a warmer heart, a more useful life. That gives you courage to go out and do it on the horizontal level as well. We asked, how important is vulnerability in the Christian life and in ministry? Open your heart to open your usefulness. Open your heart to open your usefulness. Let's pray. Invulnerable God, thank you for becoming vulnerable in Jesus so that we can connect with you. Make us more vulnerable to make us more useful. In Jesus' name, amen.